Joining us now on the line, you hear him on the Sportsnet Radio Network. He's the host of Sportsnet 590, The Fans. The Bottom Line, Jory Mittelstadt. Jory, were you that dude at that Roger Goodell presser yesterday who was screaming, elevator, elevator?
What was that?
It was a Howard Stern thing. It was.
The producer.
It was a Howard Stern thing?
Yes.
Yeah, it was a producer.
I wasn't watching it live, but I wanted to see some of it. And actually, I think I might have been watching live at that particular moment. I had just tuned in, and everybody ignored it and went on with the press conference, and I didn't think much after. But I at one point, I wanted to know exactly what it was. But it's not important in the grand scheme of things. And for our purposes on our show, as you know, and trust me, I'm not, and I said this last week, like, I'm not trying to minimize or shy away from discussing the multitude of issues facing the league right now, but frankly, for us on our show, we don't really care other than how does the absence of these players impact the line and how you're going to bet and all that stuff. We're all about the games.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's pretty much our conversation as well, Jory. We will get to preview the week with you and talk to you about what's going on the field with the NFL this weekend. And this weekend, tomorrow, we see the Seattle Seahawks and Denver Broncos going at it for the first time since the Super Bowl. I think the Broncos have blocked that out of their memory. I'm not sure that they even recall the last time they've met. But we haven't been treated to a regular season Super Bowl rematch since the Patriots and Packers met in 97. Green Bay won, as they did the Super Bowl the year before. And fun fact, guys, Pat's head coach at the time, yep, Pete Carroll, is on the championship side this time.
That's right.
Yeah.
Pete Carroll was the coach, and Pete didn't do all that well. I mean, he had moderate success in his first two go-rounds because he was also head coach of the Jets, as you might recall. And then he went off to college and had a ton of success at USC, and he's been pretty darn good in Seattle, no question about that.
Jory, how the hell is that? Now, with all the respect to the Steelers and Panthers, how the hell is that game not the Sunday nighter?
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that because I was looking at the games this week a few days ago with my son preparing our viewing, and he said the same thing. He goes, how is that not the Sunday nighter? And my response was, and again, you got to dig sort of deep into the schedule, but you can't forget that CBS and Fox, they do have a say in which games they get, especially the late ones where the audiences are bigger,
that makes sense.
The 4:30 kickoffs. Mm-hmm. And so they have a right to some of those marquee matchups. It's not all about Sunday night, even though it might seem that way. And so for whatever reason, this one ended up as a 4:35 or 4:25 kick. And there's only three late games, so it'll get the bulk of the attention. But that's the primary reason. Is you have to give CBS and Fox, who also pay so much money for the rights to televise these games, that you got to give them some carrots on Sunday afternoon, and that would be my explanation.
Well, and mentioned Panthers and Steelers and the Sunday nighter. Just looking at that game briefly, the Pittsburgh Steelers notably, they just don't look like the same Pittsburgh Steelers that we're used to. I mean, they haven't registered a takeaway on defense, averaging 107 yards rushing allowed per game. Creating turnovers and stuffing the run used to be the thing that the Pittsburgh Steelers did with Dick LeBeau coordinating the defense. He's still doing that, but they're not still doing that.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I don't want to say these aren't your father's Pittsburgh Steelers, because that's a whole different era. They're not your older brother's, if you have one, Pittsburgh Steelers. And that's been the story pretty much the last two, three seasons. That defense was aging, and if you look around, a lot of the veterans who were the modern-day steel curtain, if you will. I'm talking about, you know, don't forget, they've won a couple Super Bowls with Ben Roethlisberger as their quarterback, and their defense was so strong for pretty much about a decade. But all that's really left is Kiesel and Polamalu from the old guard. I'm forgetting somebody else, but Ike Taylor. But other than that, there's been a huge changeover, a lot of younger players brought in. And they haven't been very good. And it's funny because you talk about no turnovers, it's only two games. But if memory serves, I think they went about six games or maybe even seven into last season without forcing a turnover. And not being able to stop the run in this league is a massive problem. I think it was through week one, all, it was either five or six teams. There's so many numbers circling in my head, but it was either five or six teams in week one that ran the ball more than they threw the ball, talking about attempts, all won the game. And that tells you something. Yes, it's pass happy and scoring happy, and the way they're calling it certainly favors the offense and the passing game. But if you can run the ball in this league, you can be a winning team, period, end of story, because it opens up so much in the passing game if the defense has to respect the run. And Pittsburgh has had a real problem doing that. I was doing some of my write-ups yesterday. Quick math in my head, right? They were up 27-3 at halftime week one against Cleveland, okay? Mm-hmm. They scored 3 points there, so they've been outscored 50-9 in the last six quarters.
Wow.
And you know, it's funny. I was on with Jeff Blair yesterday, and
I'm not familiar with that name.
Why are you disrespecting Jeff?
No, I like Jeff Blair. We even filled in for his show. I just want to throw it out there.
And he asked me, he said, what game jumps off the board at you? And it could be for any reason. And I said, this one is screaming at me because I don't understand the line. Talking Carolina-Pittsburgh. And I have that written down for our Vegas insider, Dave Malinsky, tomorrow, and Scott Kaminsky, the sportsbook director at thegreek.com and betthegreek.net. Because I know you guys aren't neophytes, right? So quick quiz, how much is home field worth for the point spread?
I'm going to say at least 2 points.
Home field is generally considered worth 3 points.
Oh, I was going to say.
So if the teams are evenly matched,
yeah.
Right? If that's the consensus, Vegas or otherwise, generally there's some agreement on whether teams are evenly matched or not, then home field's worth 3 points. So are you telling me that Pittsburgh and Carolina right now are even? Because Carolina's only a three-point favorite. I don't get it. They've been disrespected the first 2 weeks. They won on the road at Tampa as a dog. Couldn't figure that one out. And then they were a small favorite, very small favorite, last week at home to Detroit. Carolina at home, they haven't given up over 20 points to anybody in a season plus. Like, all through last season and this season, they averaged like giving up like 12 points a game at home.
Yeah.
And I don't get it, right? The odds makers are giving the Steelers, in my opinion, way too much respect, and I think Carolina's a good play there.
Yeah, Jerry, right now in Dom Best, Carolina is -3. Just backtracking just for 1 second,
yep.
The Broncos are getting 4.5 points, 5 points in Seattle against the Seahawks. It's very hard for me not to grab some points when Peyton Manning's my quarterback.
That's valid. I think... Here's the thing on this game. I think normally, if Seattle hadn't lost last week, I think this is 6.5.
Mm.
I really, really believe that. I don't have to tell you, I don't have to tell most of the listeners how good Seattle is at home. We've all seen it, unless you don't watch the league, especially in the last couple of years. We all know that to be the case. And they were knocked down a peg with that loss at San Diego, but there were a lot of factors that went into that. One of them being it was 120 degrees Fahrenheit on the field in San Diego, and I think Seattle wilted, and San Diego had such a good game plan. They really, really did a great job of just picking up small chunks on first and second down and then having third and manageable. And that allowed them to have the full offensive arsenal. They didn't have to be in a must-pass situation where Seattle can pin their ears back and get after the quarterback, which they're so good at. And they possessed the ball, San Diego, for 42 minutes in that game.
Wow.
Because the Seattle offense played well. So to circle back, it looks like, yeah. I mean, Denver hasn't been an underdog in something like 30 weeks. Like, since Peyton's been there, I think it's been a long time, almost 2 years, two full years that they haven't been an underdog. But I got to tell you, I'm not so inclined to go against Seattle at home coming off a loss. The Denver defense hasn't been great. The Denver offense has been really good in the first half, and then they've struggled a bit in second halves. I think Seattle could lay waste to them again. Super Bowl repeat.
with Jory Mittelstadt of The Bottom Line, heard Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan in Toronto with George Russick. I'm Jeff Sammet at Sportsnet Today on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Well, in mentioning the Chargers on the road this weekend in Buffalo, and Chargers proving last week that they could go up against anyone and beat anyone at any given time, the Buffalo Bills, I can't believe we're saying this in week three, looking to go 3-0. I mean, if EJ Manuel doesn't turn the ball over and distributes the ball evenly, then the Bills would always have a fighting chance in any given week. Is this a game that you would look to avoid? That if you're looking for sure bets, this is one that goes down the line.
Yeah, I don't think there's any sure bet here. Here's what you have to consider, and your synopsis of Buffalo was really good. If EJ Manuel doesn't turn it over, they always have a chance to win. Their defense competes. They're really good on special teams. They run the ball really well. They have, you know, playmakers now, certainly Spiller. We saw that last week with the kickoff return touchdown. Sammy Watkins showed why they moved up in the draft to get him last week. He had a big day. But Manuel, you know, he's still a work in progress. His accuracy leaves something to be desired. So does his decision-making and his ability to convert on third down. So all the other elements have to be there for them to win. Having said that, San Diego, you know, it's that old letdown possibility, and they got to go cross-country. West Coast team playing a 1 o'clock Eastern kickoff is always a problem. The numbers will bear that out. So I think Buffalo's in a really good spot here. If, as you said, they can avoid turning the ball over, I think this game's going to be tight, and they have a very good chance to win. I think it's a coin toss. At best, so yeah, there's no sure bet here. If you have a strong opinion on one side or the other, hey, go for it. But I don't.
Jory, there's one thing if I want to lay a couple jelly beans down, a little sprinkle on a couple games, there's one thing I always look for, and I essentially don't even think about it when I make this bet, and I just want to get your thoughts. And I know the percentage is way up there in what teams would cover, but any time in the instance of the Baltimore Ravens and Cleveland Browns, it's an AFC North showdown in Cleveland, and I'm getting 1.5, 1 point. But generally, when it's a little more than that, when the home team in a division game gets points, I will always take the home team. Do you kind of follow that same formula, or you don't look at things like that when you're trying to handicap a game?
Absolutely right, George. Divisional games you have to look at in a whole different light. A home dog in a divisional game, even when they might be a weak squad, at least to that point in the season, 100%. Home dogs in divisional games are a good play generally. I'm not going to sit here and tell you you're going to cash 75% of the time. It just doesn't work that way. If it was that easy, right, we'd all be doing something else and cashing tickets all the time because we wouldn't have to work. But no, that there's nothing wrong with that approach, and it's generally a sound one. I don't want to throw my friend Randall the handle under the bus, but he used that, you know, some of that logic Thursday night. You know, he had Tampa, and he had been 2-0 on the first two Thursday nighters.
Well, if you're going to go down, you might as well go down in a heap of flames.
Yeah, if you're going to go down in a ball of flames. But but there's nothing wrong with that kind of thinking, handicapping wise. And again, the numbers will show that more often than not, like you're not going to win only 40% of the time under that scenario, maybe in a very small sample size, but over time, yeah. And this Cleveland team, it's early, but you got to be pretty impressed without Josh Gordon. You know, they were so bad in that first half against Pittsburgh, but since then they've played well. Their defense was good last year. They have a defensive-minded head coach. And I have to say, thus far, I think Mike Pettine's done a pretty good job. I think some of the way he handled the whole Hoyer-Manziel thing throughout the preseason was a little goofy. But at the end of the day, he went with Hoyer. I think that was the right call. And he's got this team playing with a lot of jam, and they look like they're going to be a competitive team pretty much all year. And now they might get – well, it looks like they're going to get Josh Gordon back for at least the last six games. I think that's some sound handicapping, George. There's nothing wrong with that.
Jory, I'd love to hear what you have to say about Colin Kaepernick, 49ers quarterback, and whether or not he is elite. The 49ers taking on the Cardinals this weekend. And Kaepernick last Sunday night, I mean, his club blew a 17-0 lead, then a 20-7 lead to the Bears. Three interceptions, a lost fumble. I mean, can Kaepernick be considered amongst the elite in the NFL?
It's getting paid like it. But, yeah, he's not there yet. He has all the tools. There is no question about it. He is a special athlete with an incredible arm. He still needs to improve some of his decision-making, when to throw it away, when to try and fit it into tight windows. I think one or two of those decisions were poor last week, but he offers so much. And I'm not talking about just taking off and running. It's just you can do so many different things in your offense with a quarterback like that. And we've seen, remember the read option a couple of years ago was all the rage, RG3, Offensive Rookie of the Year. So many teams were running it, but they quickly realized that your quarterback can't take these kind of hits if he's going to stay on the field. So they're very creative offensively, San Fran, but he still needs to clean some things up. And I really thought that the offense would take off this year, that it would be a lot better with a healthy Michael Crabtree, with the addition of Stevie Johnson, their ability to run the ball. I really thought, and that might still happen, but Kaepernick is not elite. I'd put him middle of the pack, but talent-wise, he's certainly in the elite category, but he's got to put it all together. And I expect him to play better this week, although it's no easy task in Arizona against a good defense of the Cardinals.
Jory, you talk about not being your older brother's team, and this is another prime example of a division game where the home team gets points in the Cardinals in an NFC West tilt. But the Cardinals, a team who were on fire at the end of last season, went into Seattle and beat the Seahawks at CenturyLink, a team that's been playing fantastic defense and just looked like a different franchise with Bruce Arians in charge. Are we maybe underestimating the Arizona Cardinals just a little bit?
Well, I think a lot of people going into the season, I think the odds reflected that, were respecting them. They were a 10-win team. As you mentioned, they won in Seattle last year, the only team to do so in the last couple of years. Again, they can run the ball. A lot of the time, they still have good talent at wide receiver. They're a good team. Bruce Arians has proven to be a good coach, and I think we saw that when he was the head man essentially for most of 2012. At Indy, in fact, right? He was the coach of the year when Pagano was undergoing cancer treatment. So, yeah, they're a good team. They're a little bit under the radar because of the division they play in. But they got a problem right now, a quarterback. Not that, you know, Carson Palmer is as talented a quarterback, not with his legs, but in terms of his arm, as anybody in the league. And any scout, anybody who really understands football will tell you that. But he tends to have these brain cramps. You know, it's almost like Cutler or Romo. You know, you get good Carson and bad Carson shows up sometimes at the wrong time. But right now he's hurt. With all due respect to Drew Stanton, who got the win last week, it wasn't because of Drew Stanton. The Giants basically handed the Cardinals that game with turnovers, drops, penalties at the wrong time, just overall sloppy play. Because the Giants easily could have won that game. But they had to go to their backup quarterback on pretty short notice, and it looks like, and Stanton's going to start again. And if Palmer was in there, I'd feel a lot better about their chances. I'm not going to write them off, but this is a game that San Fran has to win against a backup quarterback in Drew Stanton in a divisional game. Going back to your initial thought about taking a home dog in the division, again, there's nothing wrong with that, and Arizona's going to compete in this game. But I think this is a game that San Fran has to have.
Well, and speaking of my 0-2 Giants, they hosted the Houston Texans this weekend. And I don't think anybody really thought that Ryan Fitzpatrick was going to work out with the Houston Texans. And maybe it's too early to diagnose as such. But
Fitzmagic, Salmon.
But Fitzpatrick has been Fitzmagic for the Houston Texans. And you know why? Because they're not asking him to do too much. Again, we talked about EJ Manuel and distribution of the ball. Fitzpatrick is doing that with the Houston Texans and avoiding mistakes. And just, you know, his average completion has been for only 6.3 yards. So they're not asking him to do too much. Some short passes, mix things up, and the Texans are doing well.
Well, he hasn't had to do a whole lot.
Right.
Now, having said that, in the NFL, you're going to ask your quarterback, there will be points in the game where you have to convert a third down or a few to sustain a drive, to keep the clock moving late in the game if you're ahead. And so far, Fitzpatrick has done that. He's been pretty, I don't think he's thrown a pick. You look at his numbers, you talked about the average completion, it's pretty low.
He hasn't thrown a pick, he hasn't taken a sack.
Yep, they've protected him well. But again, what we talked about a little while back, running the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've been doing that extremely well. Arian Foster, though, is questionable tomorrow, and that's important. Right, with Ben Tate's no longer there. He's hurt in Cleveland. That's another story. But Arian Foster's, I think, gone over 100 yards in both games. He's well over 200 combined. They've controlled the ball. Their defense has been lights out. Not that they, I mean, they played the Raiders last week, and I don't know. If Raiders aren't the 32nd ranked team in the league, they're not much better than 31st, not through 2 weeks. So take that with a grain of salt. And they did have a pretty good, a decent win week one, did Houston. Their defense, their defense was ranked in the top 10 last year and in the top 10 against the run and the pass. And they lost 14 straight games.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Right? So let's not forget they were 2-0 last year, and then the bottom fell out. I don't see that happening this year, but do any of us believe that Fitzpatrick can take this team to 10, 11 wins? I don't know.
I don't think so.
In fact, while it pains me to say this, I think the Giants are in a decent spot tomorrow because you got to remember, aside from what we said, well, actually, Tampa Bay, they lost two close games their first 2 weeks, very close games. They could have won either one of them before they got torched. And generally, teams are never as good as they look or as bad as they look. It's a week-to-week league. Anybody can beat anybody. And I actually think your Giants, you know, if they're going to continue to turn it over and Victor Cruz not catch the ball when he's supposed to, same thing with Randall, and they can get any kind of running game, I think the Giants might surprise the Texans tomorrow.
He's the co-host of The Bottom Line, Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock along the Sportsnet Radio Network. Jory Mittelstadt here on Sportsnet Today. That's Jeff. I'm George. Jory, Bill O'Brien and the Texans lining J.J. Watt, the freak that he is in tight end. We saw him catch a touchdown a la Mike Vrabel last week. But if I'm a Houston Texans fan, please, for the love of Christmas, don't line this guy up on offense, because if he gets hurt on offense, Jory, my goodness, he is, I think, already the defensive player of the year.
Come on, it's football.
2 weeks in, he's the defensive player of the year.
Football, man up.
Okay, I'm not going to totally disagree. He didn't have a sack last week, but the thing about J.J. Watt is he wreaks havoc. He doesn't have to have sacks. He doesn't have to have tackles, okay, for him to impact the game on pretty much every snap. Because he is just, you got to double team him. That frees up other guys. He deflects passes. He's just a complete menace. If you're going to spot him here or there on offense, he's apparently a tremendous athlete. No problem with that catch. He was wide open. Cool. And it's funny, I don't know if you know this, you brought up Mike Vrabel. He's the linebacker coach in Houston. Did you know that?
Whoa, I did not. Look at that.
Full circle.
There's a little nugget for you guys. He's actually on the staff with the Texans.
Hmm.
So you know he had a little bit, you talk about how they used him in New England that way to great success. I think the guy scored like 10, 12 touchdowns.
Never dropped a pass.
Linebacker. But I just want to bring back where I started in terms of J.J. Watt being the defensive player of the year. Here's a question for you. Who was the defensive player of the year last year? And I'm not trying to fool you guys, but I think I'm making my point by the silence on the other side.
My guess would have been Watt.
It wasn't.
Season they had.
Defensive player of the year last year in the league was Luke Kuechly, the linebacker for the Carolina Panthers.
That's right.
And he still doesn't get enough attention. It's all J.J. Watt. And J.J. Watt deserves it. I don't want to take anything away from him. He 100% deserves it because he might be the best defensive player in the league. And if some people think he's not, he's in the top three. But Luke Kuechly is right there with him. He has picked right up where he left off. Remember, no Greg Hardy last week and for the foreseeable future for the Panthers. Yet this defense doesn't miss a beat, and it's because of Luke Kuechly. This guy is incredible. So I don't want to pour water on your, you know, on your hot flame for J.J. Watt, but don't forget about Luke Kuechly.
In looking at offense, what would be the big offensive game this weekend? You know, I got to say, looking at the Packers and Lions, that might be the game because I'm not sure either has a secondary that's capable of stopping like a tandem of Aaron Rodgers to Jordy Nelson, Stafford, and obviously Calvin Johnson. I think if we're going to see a lot of points in a ball game, this might be the game where we see it more than any other.
If the quarterbacks are protected in this game, you're 100% right. Mm. Green Bay's had some trouble protecting Aaron Rodgers thus far because you watch Aaron Rodgers, and in my opinion, best quarterback in the league. He is the best quarterback in the league. He offers absolutely the most when you look at it in totality. And I'm not saying it's a huge gap to Peyton or Breeze or Brady maybe dropping off a bit, whoever, you know, the big boys. But Rodgers is that guy, but they have not protected him well enough this year. We saw that in game one in Seattle, and it was a problem last week against the Jets, too, when they were down 21-3. So if he gets time, he'll rip you apart, although the supporting cast, aside from Jordy Nelson, is not what it has been in the past in Green Bay. They're looking for a tight end, you know, since JerMichael Finley's been gone. They haven't found one yet. And they need a little bit more help at wide receiver, but he can light it up no matter who's out there in Rodgers. And on the flip side, Detroit at home is always scary. They have so many weapons. The problem with Detroit, and we haven't quite seen a major change yet, is just, like the Giants, sloppiness. Penalties at the wrong time, turnovers at the wrong time, but penalties in particular that are drive killers. Because if they can stay clean that way, Detroit, their offense, again, especially on the fast track at home, is very dangerous. So I would agree, as long as the quarterbacks are protected and they get some time to throw, we could see some real fireworks in Detroit. Have to agree. The total, I think, is pretty high. I don't have it in front of me at the moment. But that might be one to look at, A, to go over, and B, to watch for pure entertainment, because there are 10 early games, and you got to pick your, you know, you got to pick where you're going to focus.
That's why we got Red Zone now, Jory. It's fantastic. Keeping in your beloved NFC East division, your Cowboys and Jeff's Giants, the Eagles and Redskins tangle in Philadelphia. But right now, the line seems to be -6 for the Eagles. There's a 5.5 out there as well. But the Kirk Cousins era begins for Washington. Could this be some good points for a team that has a lot of weapons if DeSean Jackson is, in fact, healthy enough to go? And you'd figure this would be the game he definitely want to play against his former team. You have him, you have Garcon, you have Alfred Morris running the ball when Jordan Reed comes back, the tight end, when he's healthy. There's a lot of weapons out there for Cousins. Could Washington be a team that you can look out for the rest of the season if, in fact, they can get some sort of quarterbacking?
There's a lot of people out there, and apparently, even though he won't come right out and admit it, head coach Jay Gruden of the Skins, that actually believes that Cousins is a better fit, at least in Gruden's offense, than RG3. As a starter, Cousins has been okay, right? He started a bunch of games last year when RG3 was hurt late in the year, or they sat him down, combination. His numbers as a starter, okay. Not great, certainly not horrible. When he's come on in relief, he's been lights out, and he did that again last week. Now, granted, it was the Jags. You're right. A lot of people saw the talent that Washington had assembled on offense during the offseason, and there is a lot of talent there. DeSean Jackson at the moment is highly questionable. He's not doubtful. He has said for everybody to hear he wants to play in this game bad. Back in Philly, we'll see what kind of reception he gets from the famous Philly fans. But, yeah, I think Washington's a team and that you do have to watch out for. And, again, you got to remember that it was the Jags last week. They had 10 sacks. 10 sacks.
Good God.
But.
Henny. Block for him, for the love of God. Block.
But they also had three week one. So you can't, you know, you're not going to hit double digits in sacks very often in this league. I guess unless you play the Jags, maybe the Raiders at the moment. But Washington is a team to watch out for. Philly, you know, they can't walk the tightrope every week, right? They've trailed by 14 or more in the second half of both their games and came back to win. First team to do that in NFL history. They've had a history of slow starts with, you know, in the Chip Kelly era dating back to last year. So I think that's something to watch out for. And they've got a couple offensive linemen hurt. I think Washington's in a good spot here. I think they needed that win last week. I think it gave them some confidence. And I think they feel good with Kirk Cousins out there, a quarterback, and the pass rush. It's, you know, the one thing you got to worry about with Philly, and we saw it last week, both of you and I, we've talked about my feelings about LeSean Shady McCoy and how spectacular he is. But how about Darren Sproles last week? Like, what pickup for that offense.
For a fifth-round pick.
That's just the perfect fit, and he was unbelievable, right? Monday night in that comeback win over the Colts. So he was the X factor and the difference. And that's something. And Chip Kelly knows how to call plays and get the best out of these guys who are so good in space. That's how he gets them out there. Here's my thought on this game overall, and I'll say it again tomorrow. I think it's going to be a close game. Give me the points.
Well, I hope it's going to be a close game, because that'd be one I'm keeping an eye on, given our Giants Cowboys love. I want to see what's going on in the NFC East.
Your Giants are right in the thick of the division race.
Yeah.
They're going to make some.
You
noise.
Never know in that division.
As a Giant or Cowboy fan, I guess, right, you got to sort of root for the Skins to, you know, keep everybody
right.
in sight, because Philly's at 2-0, Washington 1-1. You'd rather have two 2-1 teams than one team at 3-0.
Yeah, and I think Washington will be in last place in the East anyway, so that's why I'd be rooting for them. But then, you know, I'll be rooting for Washington. They'll end up winning the division or something like that, because you just never know what's going to happen there. Jory Mittelstadt, we'll listen for you tomorrow at 10 o'clock on Sportsnet 590, The Fan with the Bottom Line. Thanks, Jory. It's a pleasure, and thanks for spending some of your Saturday afternoon with us.
I don't know. Do I have any material left for tomorrow? Man, that was long.
Spoiler alert.